I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
The Chris Ann Hall Show.
Any varmint that crosses that lady's path has met its match. Come on!
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Show. Chris Ann Hall here, KRISANNEHALL.com. Welcome to Liberty Over Security, Principle Over Party, Truth Over Your Favorite Personality. And it occurred to me when I got a letter from somebody in Texas. I got a letter from Lyle Ann, I think. Lyle Ann, if I'm not pronouncing that name properly, I do apologize. But Lyle Ann sends me an email from Texas which says this. I have a constitutional question. At a town hall yesterday, we had a heated discussion with our congressional representative, Mike Conaway. Our question was, why isn't the House withholding funds for Obama's overreaches? Conaway's reply was, the House can't do that alone. It also takes the Senate. I have been under the impression that the House alone controlled the purse strings. Am I correct? Yes, Lalanne, you are absolutely correct. And it occurred to me, I've never really done a radio show entirely on this whole spending issue. Who spends and on what do they spend? And so I think maybe it's necessary for us to do that. So this show, I think I'm going to title, Budget Lies and something else. I don't know. I had a whole title in my mind, and it's just totally leaped out of my brain. So let's talk about this. Now, Mike Conaway is a Republican. And I think it's important for us to talk about Mike Conaway, who he is, because of his position in the Republican Party in the House of Representatives. And we've got to wonder, is Mike Conaway ignorant of the proper constitutional operation of government, or is Mike Conaway lying to his constituents? Now, Mike Conaway is in his sixth term in the U.S. House of Representatives. He represents 29 counties in Texas. Okay, so this is a Texas Republican, supposed to be the quintessential conservative constitutional guy. He's from Texas, right? Not only that, he's not from the liberal parts of Texas, because I don't know if you understand, but there are liberal parts of Texas. And so he is not from the liberal parts of Texas. He is in the 11th congressional district, which include counties, cities of Midland, Odessa, and San Angelo. Now, these are military places. Now, he says in his biography, I've gone to his website, a conservative Republican, Representative Conaway believes in the principles of lower taxes, smaller government, and a secure nation. I'll notice that he doesn't believe in defending the Constitution as part of his platform, but again, we're talking about establishment Republican, and you will be rare to find an establishment Republican that understands the Constitution. Okay, so I'm making a clarification there, establishment Republican. So a conservative Republican, he calls himself, Representative Conaway believes in the principles of lower taxes, smaller government, and a secure nation. His background as a CPA gives him a unique perspective on fiscal responsibility and ensuring every taxpayer dollar is being spent wisely. In the House, now here's the one of the important parts of it. So in the House, Congressman Conaway is the chairman of the House Committee on Agriculture. So he probably doesn't understand that farm bills are unconstitutional, and also serves on the House Armed Services Committee and the Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, which means he probably doesn't understand the proper limitations of the federal government on the Fourth Amendment. He is a deputy Republican whip, which means he's high up there, okay? Deputy Republican whip, a position he has held since the 112th Congress. Now, it goes on to say he's a native Texan. He served in the military. His bachelor's degree is in business administration and in accounting, which makes him this fiscal conservative. He worked with Price Waterhouse. He started working with George W. Bush as the chief financial officer for Bush Exploration. He developed a lasting friendship with President Bush as they learned together what it takes to run a business. He is an ordained deacon in the Baptist Church. Congressman Conway and his wife Suzanne live in Midland and have 4 children and 7 grandchildren. So nowhere in Mike Conaway's biography does he speak about the Constitution. So we're just going to give him the benefit of the doubt that even though he has been 6 years in the House of Representatives, he is ignorant of how the Constitution operates on spending. And remember, this is because we don't train our representatives and we don't require them to know the Constitution before we send them up there. How many, just think about this in your district, how many of your representatives know the Constitution? How many of them know the proper role of Congress, the proper role of being a representative in the House, a proper role of being in the Senate? I would say probably very, very few. So I want to spend this show talking about budgets because we have this whole looming budget crisis, a new shutdown on the way, and then the email that reminded me from Lyle Land in Texas that we have congressmen who do not understand the power of the purse. So we have this government shutdown coming on, and you know that the whole thing is going to be all about, well, the House wants to do this, the Senate can do this, but we don't have support in the office of the president. The president will veto our budget, or the Senate majority-minority will filibuster. And so you need to make sure that we have more people in the Senate and we have a president who is a Republican. And I just, you know, I don't know about you, but I just want to say as a little aside, don't you think having the House majority and the Senate majority is enough? I mean, seriously, don't you believe that we have given them enough and they've done absolutely nothing with it? Well, I want to show you how much they should be doing and how little they're actually doing, and so they don't deserve any more power. And so we have this government shutdown that's going to turn into a big drama because they want to use it as a political tool in the 2016 election to get everybody to vote for the Republican, whomever it will be, Jeb Bush. And then we will be stuck with this. Now, our federal government was created by the states in 1787 and was created to be a limited and defined federal government. Not my words, but the words of the people who created it. This is easily researchable and verifiable. James Madison, called the father of the Constitution, said in Federalist Papers 45 that the powers, not the rights, delegated, which is delegated is a term repeated in the Tenth Amendment, so the powers delegated to the federal government are few and defined. Those that remain in the states are numerous and indefinite. Madison then tells us what few powers delegated to the federal government. He calls them external objects. He says they are limited essentially to foreign affairs. That's what external objects mean. And then he further clarifies by saying there's specifically war, peace, negotiation, and foreign commerce. Now, health care and women's health needs not falling in one of these categories is not a power that has been delegated to the federal government by the states. Now, of course, I'm sure Mr. Conway and those around him would probably invoke the General Welfare Clause, but that is a misapplication of the Constitution. Now, this is not a class about the General Welfare Clause, but if you want to understand how the General Welfare Clause works and a full analysis on this, please go to my website and read an article that I've written about James Madison's warning on the General Welfare Clause. I also have a General Welfare Clause specifically tailored to Obamacare. And so we know that healthcare is not a delegated power, and meeting women's health issues is not a delegated power. Amnesty is not a delegated power. ATF is not a delegated power. Environment is not a delegated power. Its regulation by the central government is an unconstitutional act. Alexander Hamilton clarifies that in Federalist Paper 78, says no legislative act contrary to the Constitution can be valid, and therefore any action outside the Constitution is simply void and of no force. Now, the Supreme Court gets in there, all this other stuff, but for brevity's sake, I will refer you to another article that I've written on the Supreme. I've written several articles on the limitation of the power of the Supreme Court. You can simply go to my website and within the website search engine, enter in the term Supreme Court, or you can read a letter that I wrote to the Governor Greg Abbott of Texas. He, at that time, he was the Attorney General. Now, what we need to understand is that after we've established all these things are not constitutional, we need to understand the check and balance for when federal governments start spending more money than they're supposed to. And the means to check such federal overreach was placed in Article 1, Section 7 of the Constitution, and the founders' explanation of the powers and purposes of those powers vested in the House of Representatives. So when we get back, we're going to get really, really deep into Article 1, Section 7.
Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
So, the means to check federal overreach was placed in Article 1, Section 7 of the Constitution. And these powers were solely vested in the House of Representatives. And since all government shutdown is based on the fact that we don't have the Senate involved or the president's going to veto, let's look at see how Article 1, Section 7 is really supposed to work. Now, Article 1, Section 7 reads, all bills for raising revenue shall originate in the House of Representatives, but the Senate, and this is one of the most important words after shall originate, okay, but the Senate may propose or concur with amendments as on other bills. May propose or concur. That's it. Propose or concur. They don't have a voting power. They can propose amendments to the House of Representatives budget. They concur with amendments. But they can't disagree. They cannot eliminate. And they cannot stop a budget. And by the way, the word there may is permissive, which means they don't have to. So if they don't propose any amendments or they don't concur with any amendments, then the original bill on the budget is as the House presents. You see, the House of Representatives alone is the budget. Someone might say, well, but the Constitution declares that all laws must go through the House and the Senate with the veto power of the President, which can be overturned by 2/3 of the Congress. But the problem is, a budget is not a law. And there's a distinct difference between a budget and a law. You see, the most important difference is why it rests in the House alone. A budget expires. A law does not. Something that does not expire, that must be repealed, must go through every single branch of government to ensure that there are checks and balances when creating laws that do not expire. They must be repealed. But a budget expires. You don't repeal a budget. It lasts, and then it expires. And every year, the House must readdress a new budget. Every term, they must address a new budget. Do you know that a future House, a future Congress, a future federal government is not bound by a budget of a past Congress? No. So when they make these promises in Congress that they're going to pass a budget that will spend today, but cut the budget over the next 10 years. They're lying to you because you can't propose a budget that lasts 10 years because budgets expire. And a future Congress is never bound by a past Congress's budget plan. That's why it's different. It expires. And every time we must have a new one. Now, James Madison, although the Senate may not like it, they have no constitutional say in the matter, and James Madison tells us why. He says, quote, "The House of Representatives can not only refuse, but they alone can propose the supplies requisite for the support of government. They, in a word, hold the power of the purse, that powerful instrument by which we behold, in the history of the British Constitution, an infant and humble representation of the people gradually enlarging the sphere of its activity and importance, and finally reducing, as far as it seems to have wished, all the overgrown prerogatives of the other branches of government." See, that power of the purse is such a huge check. It's a powerful instrument to control all the overgrown prerogatives of all the other branches of government. That's the tool of the power of the purse, to stop the spending in the other branches. He says, "This power over the purse may, in fact, be regarded as the most complete and effectual weapon with which any constitution can arm the immediate representatives of the people, the House of Representatives, not the Senate, for obtaining a redress of grievance, and for carrying into effect every just and salutary measure." The House of Representatives are the immediate representatives of the people. The Senate is the representative of the states. The House was given the power alone to defund and fund in order to control government and represent the people.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
Well, here we go. The House of Representatives alone can refuse a budget. The House of Representatives alone can propose a budget. And the whole purpose of resting that power in the House of Representatives was so that they could control overgrown expression of power by the other branches of government. And Madison says this is the most complete and effectual weapon against government growth and government overpowering that we can put into the hands of the people. Now, further clarity comes from a discussion between Representative Alexander White and, at the time, Representative James Madison, both members of the U.S. House representing the state, the people of the of Virginia. And Mr. White says, quote, "The Constitution, having authorized the House of Representatives alone to originate money bills, places an important trust in our hands, which, as their protectors, we ought not to part with. I do not mean to imply that the Senate are less to be trusted than the House, but the Constitution, no doubt for wise purposes, has given the immediate representatives of the people a control over the whole government in this particular, which, for their interest, they ought not to let out of their hands." James Madison chimes in and says, "Oh yes, Mr. White, you're absolutely correct. As the father of the Constitution, I can confirm your understandings." He says, quote, "The Constitution places the power in the House of originating money bills. The principal reason why the Constitution had made this distinction was because they were chosen by the people and supposed to be the best acquainted with their interest and ability." Why is that important? You see, because the interest and the ability of the people being best represented by the House means that the House, holding this most powerful instrument to control the overgrowth of other branches of government, resting in the House means that the House, being so closely related and acquainted to the interests of the people, can redress every grievance in carrying in effect every just and salutary measure. The power of the purse was placed in the hands of the House on purpose and for a purpose. And it is in itself an important check on government power. Reins in the hands of the people to control spending and growth of government. And every time Congressman Conaway and his cohorts fail to maintain this check, every time the House passes a continuing resolution instead of a budget, that vital check fails the House, and the House relinquishes what our framers thought to be one of the most powerful and important powers held in trust for the people. This is how our government is supposed to work. This is how our congressmen are supposed to be representing us, protecting the integrity of the Constitution and the limited nature of the federal government. If our Republican congressmen are really, as Mr. Conaway says, ensuring that taxpayers' dollars are being spent wisely, and ensuring that we have smaller government, then they will have embraced this understanding. And as Representative White of the people of Virginia said, they ought not let out of their hands. How has the depth of ignorance as to what our constitutional mechanisms are destroyed the very nature of who we are? Why do we even have these checks and balances if our government is not going to use them? You see, our country is driving over a cliff of debt supported by this welfare state. The people are ignorant of the Constitution, driven by media misinformation and propaganda, and congressmen who lead us to believe that they're for fiscal responsibility and smaller government cheer this runaway train and label those of us who desperately seek to return our country back to its constitutional foundings as reckless, as ignorant. Do you know how many congressmen have looked me in the eye and said, "Oh, Chrisanne, you just don't know how it really works. I'll tell you what's reckless. Driving this freight train completely blind. Ignoring the operator's manual while our children are tied to the tracks. We're out of control. The bandits and thieves are at the levers. And our founders and framers are scratching their heads wondering why we are bent on our own destruction. Remember this in the next little while as the Dems and the Republicans try to convince us that this is the way to go. Continuing resolutions and spending out of control. How do we know what they can spend and what they can't spend on? I mean, it's not a mystery, actually. We look back to the men who wrote it. It's a matter of contract law. The Constitution is a contract, and it has to be interpreted via contract law. And contract law says that you have to go to the writers of the contract when you don't understand the provisions of the contract. We have lost our proper understanding of limited government and what it's supposed to be spending on. So we have to go back to those who wrote it and understand what they meant. And once again, we can return to James Madison. James Madison in 1792, before the House of Representatives, explains this is not an indefinite government, but a limited government. He says, quote, "I, sir, have always conceived, and I believe those who proposed the Constitution conceived, and it is still more fully known and more material to observe that those who ratified the Constitution conceived, that this is not an indefinite government, but a limited government tied down to specific powers." We are supposed to have a limited and defined federal government. Madison was simply saying that these clauses, common defense, general welfare, necessary and proper, tax and spending, were not meant to expand the power of the government beyond its limitations, but to describe the purpose of the power delegated within a strict confinement of those boundaries. In other words, these clauses that they're always using, commerce, general welfare, tax and spending, necessary and proper, they don't name a power. They describe the purpose for the powers named. And then, with amazing foresight, Madison explains the consequences of allowing the federal government to turn these clauses into powers. Oh, well, the general welfare clause is the power for the federal government to do whatever they want. The necessary and proper clause is the power for them to do whatever's necessary and proper to do whatever they want. The tax and spending clause is the power to tax and spend for all that's necessary and proper to do whatever they want. And since the commerce is the power over commerce, they can tax and spend to do whatever's necessary and proper to do whatever they want for commerce. This is not how it's supposed to work. And Madison says, because you see what this is all about, spending, right? It's all about budgets, all about money. We have the power to tax you, and we have the power to take your money, to spend it on whatever we want, because the general welfare clause says so. Because the commerce clause says so. Because the necessary and proper clause says so. It's all about money, what we can spend, as if money were a delegated power to the federal government. If Congress can, Madison says, and I quote, "If Congress can employ money indefinitely to the general welfare, and are the sole and supreme judges of the general welfare, then they may take care of religion into their own hands. They may appoint teachers in every state, county, and parish, and pay them out of their public treasury." Insert federal funds. "They may take into their own hands the education of children, establishing in like manner schools, perhaps curriculum, throughout the Union. They may assume the provisions for the poor. They may undertake the regulation of all roads other than post roads. In short, everything from the highest object of state legislation down to the most minute object of police would be thrown under the power of Congress. For every object I have mentioned would admit the application of money and might be called, if Congress so pleased, provisions for the general welfare." Do you hear within that paragraph, within that statement by James Madison, the executive agencies that are being justified by these general welfare, tax and spending, necessary proper commerce clauses, do you hear them in here? He's calling them an absurdity. He says, I quote, "I venture to declare it is my opinion that were the power of Congress to be established in the latitude contended for, it would subvert the very foundation and transmute the very nature of limited government established by the people of America." Do you know what Madison was arguing against? Madison was arguing against a farm bill, a subsidy to cod fishermen. Subsidizing industry, he says, would transmute the very nature of limited government, would subvert the very foundations. I wonder if those who are on the House Committee on Agriculture understand, have ever heard James Madison's explanation of why farm bills are completely unconstitutional. They'll take religion into their own hands. Healthcare law is completely unconstitutional and is not a power delegated to the federal government. They may appoint teachers in every state, county, parish, and pay them out of their public treasury. They may take into their own hands the education of children, establishing in like manner schools throughout the Union. Common Core, No Child Left Behind, Race to the Top, the Department of Education, all completely unconstitutional. They may provide, assume provisions for the poor. Welfare, federal welfare, totally unconstitutional. DOT, totally unconstitutional. And we don't know it because we remain ignorant. Hate me if you won't, or love me if you can. If the truth is what you want, then you found your man. I ain't backing down, I ain't backing up. If you think like I think, then crack it on up. I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stay on my ground. Take my job, but not
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
So by the father of the Constitution, based on the limited government established by the people of America, welfare, unconstitutional. The Affordable Care Act, unconstitutional. 501c3, unconstitutional. The Department of Education, unconstitutional. Race to the Top, No Child Left Behind, Common Core, unconstitutional. The Department of Transportation, unconstitutional. The federal funding of our local law enforcement, unconstitutional. And any application of federal money outside war, peace, negotiation, foreign commerce, and foreign affairs, unconstitutional. Which means all that money that they're collecting, all that money they're spending in those budgets, can be, should be, must be stopped by the House of Representatives alone. And we have changed Madison's warning into prophecy. We have subverted the very foundation and transmuted the very nature of limited government and to the fact that we have people who consider themselves fiscal conservatives, who consider themselves limited government people, championing the overgrowth of government. That which Madison said is the very thing that the House was empowered to end. Overgrowth of government. And so I want us to remember who we are. A government deriving its just powers from the consent of the governed. And the powers we've consented to are that the House alone be vested with the power of the purse through Article 1, Section 7. And that when we, the people, allow these representatives to transmute the very nature of limited government that we designed, that we allowed our representatives called the states to employ, then we are actually going along with this. We are allowing the drivers of this freight train to drive completely blind, ignore the operator's manual, right over the cliff. We're out of control. Can we just wrap our brain around this? We are being spent into oblivion by people who believe in lower taxes, smaller government, and fiscal responsibility. We are being driven over the cliff by those people. These are the people that have the majority power in the House. Those who believe in lower taxes, smaller government, and fiscal responsibility. They have the majority in the House. And they're the ones driving us over the cliff. They're the ones in charge of this budget. They're the ones with the power to shut down this overgrowth. And they won't. Why not? I don't understand. We must become educated. Samuel Adams said, "No people will tamely surrender their liberty nor be easily subdued when knowledge is diffused and virtue is preserved. But to the contrary, when a people become universally ignorant and debauched in their manners, they will sink underneath their own weight without the aid of foreign invaders." This is the wisdom that created our constitutional republic, a limited and defined government controlled by the consent of the people. It's time we educate. It's time we quit being ignorant. And it's time we control our government. God bless. See you tomorrow.